I'm here today with Dr. Patrick Collins from the School of Geography and Cluster Leader of the Creative, Livable and Sustainable Communities Research Cluster at the Whitaker Institute here at NUI Galway. Good morning, Pat. How are you today?
Good morning, Angela. I'm good.
Pat, would you like to begin by introducing yourself and telling me a little bit about your research area and your background?
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, I am co-leader on the Creative and Livable Cluster with Professor Kevin Layden. I myself am an economic geographer by training. I have a master's from here in economics, and I went over to the UK to pursue a PhD in economic geography. I suppose that was kind of a key departure point for me, the difference between economics as a discipline and geography as a discipline. And not to say anything negative about my economist colleagues at all, but geography just offered a much broader scope, you know, to look at the economy in a socio-spatial setting really, I suppose, helped you kind of get a broader view of things. And that's really, I suppose, where my work has been over the last 10 or so years. I pursued a PhD. It was very much concentrating on the software industry in Ireland at a time where it was going through quite extraordinary growth. And taking a geographic lens and looking at that was quite interesting, because much of the rhetoric around the time was that in a world where we're all moving online, you know, consider this as late 90s into the early 2000s, around the dot-com bubble, there was much hype and hyperbole about this movement online. And with all of that came this idea that geography was finally dead. That once we're online, it didn't matter if you were a company in Belmullet or in Boston, you know, you had the same access to everybody else, same access to market, same access to resources once you got yourself hooked up to the internet. Of course, as a geographer, you would take these things kind of very much, I suppose, tongue-in-cheek. But it really, I suppose, offered the opportunity to consider along a kind of much longer time scope the geography of economic development. So looking back, and let's not go too far back, but you know, in terms of the last 200 or so years of economic development, it has been a case of we've moved further and further away from geography. We used to be very much dependent on agricultural output, and that's not just us as a country, but you know, the world was. The world spent a lot of its productive time trying to feed itself. Something happened in around the 17th and 18th century, which is termed the Industrial Revolution, which saw the growth of science and innovation, but also saw a movement towards a different kind of geography, where we were very interested not in just in arable lands and who could make the most crops, but what was going on underneath that land, underneath that topography. You know, it's about iron ore and mineral resources. And then over the last 100 years or so, with the rise of true globalization, in the sense that we encounter in every aspect of our lives, you know, we begin to question how important geography is. And I can see some credence to the likes of Thomas Friedman or Francis Cairncross that would say that geography is dead. But I would say that geography is very much alive. It's just alive in a different way.
Just looking at the economy, I know that's an area that you've investigated mm-hmm. as part of your research mm-hmm. area. And there's a lot of talk at the moment in terms of the creatives and the creative economy. Mm-hmm. Can you explain to me what is the difference between the creative economy and the general economy?
There is something very interesting going on out there. If you're looking at the world globally, take it in global terms, and you look at the likes of World Bank data or UNCTAD data, and you especially concern yourself with the years of economic contraction, global economic contraction between around 2008 and 2012-13, you look at those sectors within the global economy that are performing well, and you could say with a fair degree of confidence that creativity defines those sectors that are doing most well, and those sectors that are running actually counter-cyclical to the rest of the economy. So while the likes of traditional manufacturing was contracting, there were areas, especially like app development, like films and gaming, that really were growing year on year and, you know, growing through relatively unprecedented economic recession. So, I mean, that is one way to differentiate the creative economy from the rest of the economy. But there's another way, and this way kind of is a bit more complicated. And forgive me now as I try and make it clear to you. But I suppose it is less to do with standard industrial classifications, right? You know, somebody could call themselves a creative industry and somebody could not. But if you're an industry, if you're making something, you're by its very nature creative. So really what we need to look towards is all of the economy and how all of the economy is becoming more creative rather than particular subsectors within the economy. And you can see that happening in terms of lots of products and in the way that we encounter products. I mean, things like branding has become so very, very important. I mean, if you were to take just goods as the sum of their parts and compare them with each other and then compare their end price in the market, you'd see massive difference. And in the main, that massive difference goes down to this idea of branding and marketing. So just because I have one MP3 player that does exactly the same as any other MP3 player, if that other MP3 player has a fruit logo on it, it has a much higher return in the market. So what I suppose we're getting at is how all companies are becoming more and more creative. And really what's at the core there is the lack of that which is tangible in the production process. So we seem as a race, as a global entity, to be moving much more in towards this intangible area. And to bring that down to a kind of very local level, if you were to consider Ireland, coincidentally enough, in late 2008, around the time the banks were circling the drain, it was the first time in Ireland that we made more money from selling non-tangible products than we did from selling physical products. So that our exports to the rest of the world were made up more of services than they were of physical goods. And that's interesting. I mean, I'm not saying that it's a causative factor in the financial turmoil that happened straight after. But I'm saying that it's interesting. It's interesting in showing, as a demonstrator of an economy that's evolving in a way that I don't think we've legislated for at all.
What would be examples of those non-tangible services that you're talking about there, Pat?
In Ireland, there's lots of things. Like, there's lots of very strange things that we're exporting, and it's got all to do with the tax structure that we have here. But what you're talking about is software services. You're talking about royalties. You're talking about foreign-owned companies that are selling between their subsidiaries, I suppose, intellectual property. And in the main, it is very hard to record these things through using the traditional metrics that we use for recording tangible products. So if I was to say in short what it is that myself and colleagues that I work with are trying to do, we're trying to come up with a set of measurements, come up with a set of rules, with a set of policies that legislate for or that are cognizant of this move from the tangible economy to the non-tangible economy. Because everything that we have in terms of our metrics of wealth, in terms of our metrics of productivity, our metrics of output, are all based around how much physical, tangible output you can make. And it's very much different to try and morph all those kind of instruments into a way that recognizes the intangible outputs.
How are you actually doing that? Is there a specific project that you're working on at the moment where you're looking at these measurements?
Yeah, well, I suppose there are a number of projects that we're working on, but the one that first comes to mind would be the Creative Momentum Project. Now,
what the Creative Momentum Project is trying to do is, I suppose, ultimately index creativity, you know? And so it goes back to that earlier point about how we differentiate the creative economy from the traditional economy. And we are looking at a set of regions across the northern periphery of Europe, and we are looking at the existence of creativity in those regions. And how do you do that? Well, I mean, there's a number of methodologies that we're trying to use and some that we're still trying to explore. But how we started off with, really, as I suppose, is bringing together a set of metrics in the form of an index. So to say how creative a region is, we are logging the amount of creative industries in that place. We are logging the amount of creative graduates in that place. We're logging the amount of institutions that support creativity, be it in the form of universities or institutes of higher education. We're also logging cultural institutions in that place, how art and creativity is celebrated in that place, be it in a physical form of a theatre or the less tangible form of arts festivals and whatnot. On top of that, you're trying to introduce metrics of gauging this kind of intangibility. So how it is that people are consuming culture. You know, there are metrics out there for consuming culture as a percentage of household expenditure, but that's not really what we're getting at here. What we're hoping to get at is much more about how people, for instance, how many people have social media profiles in the region, how many people are uploading podcasts in that region, how many people are uploading to YouTube, what's the rate of connectivity, and what's, you know, the rate of usage of Twitter accounts and the social media profiles within those regions. So it is, you know, it's a growing list of metrics that we're trying to pull together across all these regions to make them comparable. So not to say that creativity exists in such and such amount in this region, but just to say that creativity exists in this region relative to the region beside it in these proportions.
Just coming back to the point there on culture, Pat, you know, at the moment there's a lot of talk about culture and in the terminology of the capital of culture. And I know Galway has a bid currently in for a capital of culture 2020. Just from your own perspective, you know, coming closer to home, do you think that Galway already is a capital of culture without an official title being bestowed upon it?
Galway's relationship with culture is very, very interesting. Very interesting. And it's no doubt probably what drives a great deal of my work. Galway is consumed in the rest of Ireland and to some extent internationally as a place where culture exists and exists well. Galway isn't a capital of culture, not in terms of how Europe terms it anyway, because it's tried on at least one other occasion to get the designation of European Capital of Culture and it failed. It is very much in the running at the moment and it is shortlisted alongside two other bidding entities from Ireland for the designation for 2020. And is it a capital of culture? I mean, in so many ways, yes, and in so many other ways, no. We started working with the City Council on Galway's bid back in 2014. And one of the many exercises that we carried out to kind of get the bid up and going was, I suppose, a content analysis of other European capitals of culture and what it was that was important, essentially, in them getting that designation. You know, how did winners differentiate themselves from other competing entities to get the designation of European Capital of Culture? And it had nothing to do with the amount of Tony Award-winning theatre directors that live in your town. It did have something to do with the amount of auditoria and places to sit people to consume culture in your town. But overridingly, what it had most to do with was the amount of people in that town that were turned on to this idea of that town being a European capital of culture. So it was being overwhelming about public engagement. And that became very obvious very quickly to us when we were working on the bid for Galway and really became the central push for it all. Because
Galway has a fantastic history in terms of being home to many great cultural entities. From festivals to theatres and whatnot, it has undoubtedly punched above its weight, and it has helped define the look and the feel of the city. If one was to be a bit sceptical about these things, that the arts and culture and their influence on the development of Galway has lessened considerably over the last 20 or so years. That the kind of the radical voices of the arts community had got lost in a Celtic Tiger era that saw the city just take on its own development trajectory. And so that's tough. That's kind of hard to reconcile, this notion of a capital of culture, when it seems that we've moved away from culture in Galway. But this bid for European capital of culture, I think, has been wholly extremely positive in terms of refocusing culture. And it's not a culture that's about the 10 or so elites in Galway. It's a culture about that you, me, and everyone in this town has innately, and that a bid for European capital of culture is just not us looking to those overused names when it comes to Galway's cultural profile, but more to us looking to ourselves in terms of how it is we want to celebrate culture. And Galway has really grasped that. And if Galway keeps hold of that, I can only see Galway winning the designation. And a matter of fact, if Galway really holds on to that, it doesn't matter if Galway wins the designation or not. It has become a European capital of culture just by doing it.
Where did this whole interest start in this research area around culture, creativity? Often I hear you talk about a sense of place. Obviously, that comes from your geography background. Mm-hmm. So where did the whole interest in this research area start from?
I used to have one foot in the cultural sphere myself. I used to be involved in it with a theatre company, one over in the UK and one here in Galway. And, I mean, it is, I suppose, as a geographer, you look at how places differentiate themselves. Now, I just was on a plane last week and you got out at an airport, and we all do this every time we get out of planes, and you look around and you immediately see the same icons. You know, you see the double arches of McDonald's. You walk around, you know, even if it is in a non-English speaking country, somebody's going to speak English to you. You're going to be able to find your way around. You are going to be able to find the same shops that you have. And that, you know, increasingly the differentiation between different places has become less and less and less. There's positives to that, some, I'm trying to think of them, but you know, there are a lot of negatives to that as well. You know, you kind of ask culturally, what does that mean? How do we differentiate ourselves? Are we just all becoming this mishmash of, you know, a grey where all the colours are getting, you know, thrown in together and losing their own strengths? But when it comes to culture, culture seems very much place-based to me. You know, even consider the west of Ireland. We do become a definable entity culturally. So that while I might walk down Shop Street and I might see McDonald's and River Island and Topshop and all that stuff, I will walk just a bit further down to High Street and we'll hear authentically Irish music in its place. You know, you walk down a bit further, and if you do keep your ears open by Tuanan, you know, Cantal Dina Tríguelga, you know, you will be able to hear the language. And that becomes, you know, that's very much a place-based entity. You know, you just can't do that in other cities in Ireland. And that's key, you know, that's culture helping us differentiate the place. So that while in some respects we might look like, you know, a second-tier Bristol in terms of the shop fronts that we have, once you peer beneath it a little, you begin to uncover the culture of that place, like Galway, and that's what's innately place-based. So I really think out of all of that, that's kind of was the nebulous for this interest. And again, kind of following on from that, you know, that's what regions will compete against each other on.
if we're all the same, you know, if we are all the same in terms of what it is we have to offer in terms of, you know, shops or even political systems, what is it that we're going to differentiate ourselves on? And increasingly, it is culture.
Pat, you might just tell me about one of your most interesting projects that you've worked on today. You know, there where you talk about differentiation across countries and that, you know, as part of your research within one of your projects, have you found that this differentiation does actually stand out across these different countries?
Yeah, there's no doubt that we have, and that where it became most obvious is probably not in the most interesting projects that I've worked on, ironically enough. I worked here as a postdoc in what was then the Centre for Innovation and Structural Change. But as part of the work that we did there, we were looking at investment patterns of big multinational operations. So we were looking at the likes of Dell, Google, Intel, and asking the question why it was that they'd locate in certain places. And naturally, you know, taking Ireland as a case study, it was quite interesting. I mean, you know, there are some fascinating statistics about our foreign direct investment sector here, you know, I think not least of which is were four companies to close their doors tomorrow, we would all wake up where our GDP would be 25% less. You know, that's the outrageous amount of money that these companies are pushing through Ireland. And in lots of ways, it's easily explained by a very lucrative corporation tax. But again, as with anything, I don't think, actually, we concluded that it's not that simple. And when you got the opportunity to sit down with the likes of these corporations and ask them about their location decisions, tax was important today. It definitely was. But I hadn't had the opportunity to interview something like 70 or 80 of managers and managing directors of these big corporate entities and talk to them about Ireland and why it was they located in Ireland. It was words like culture and creativity that came up, you know, that, you know, and it wasn't in any way on my probing at all. As a matter of fact, that was a demarcator for my own personal research trajectory to change towards culture and creativity, was because these entities found those descriptors fundamental in terms of their location decisions. So that when they were talking about Ireland, sure, they'd mention a tax rate, but tax rate really only matters for a very small percentage of FDI in Ireland. It really only matters for the difference between profit centres and cost centres. But what was across the board was these entities choosing Ireland for those reasons, and those reasons around human capital, those reasons around critical thinking, and those reasons around the ability of the population to creatively engage with the work that they were doing. So for me, that was one of the best examples that I could see of culture and creativity making a difference. But in terms of interesting projects, I mean, Galway's bid for European Capital of Culture has been a monster of a thing to deal with. It's been exciting, it's been challenging, it's been lots of things, you know, but it's been the opportunity to sit down and talk with people, have a conversation with people about what exactly culture is. That's been really, really interesting, you know, because as somewhat statistically quantitative leaning geographer, you know, my impetus would be to try and put a metric on culture. But, you know, when you sit down and you talk about with people about culture, you just realize that it's way beyond metrics in lots of ways, that it's something that's innate and very close to people's identity and people's hearts. And, you know, having had the opportunity to do that was really very, very exciting.
So where to next, Pat? What's next on the research agenda for Patrick Collins?
Well, there are a couple of things on the horizon. I mean, Creative Momentum Project really has just kicked off in the last couple of months, was launched in October. So I'll be working with Aisling Murta and here in Geography in the Whitaker on that. We are excited about this idea of indexing culture across different places. about showing the difference that culture makes to certain regions, about proving the existence of the creative economy in more peripheral regions and taking it away from this urban-centric notion, you know, this idea that, you know, the creatives are only exist in Soho in London or in certain parts of Berlin, and say that, you know, the creative economy is a vibrant, sustainable alternative economy and growing economy for Europe's peripheral regions. After that, we are looking down the line at this notion of audience development, and I've been talking with colleagues up in the University of Ulster about that. I mean, it seems a straightforward term, but it's actually quite complicated. It's not just about getting more people into theatres or anything like that. It is about trying to understand how much culture is becoming part of our everyday lives. And this fallacy that just because you don't go to a theatre means you don't engage with culture. You know, my contention would be that every one of us is engaging with culture more and more and more through the use of technology, and that is a whole area, a whole market that's rife for somebody to exploit, or it's definitely a whole research area that could be very interesting to see exactly the new forms of culture that people are engaging with through technology.
Pat, thanks very much for that insight into culture, creativity, and indeed the importance of geography, which we now know is still alive. I'd like to wish you well in your future projects, particularly in your upcoming Creative Momentum project that you're currently working on. And if you'd like to learn more about Pat Collins's work here at NUI Galway, you can do so by checking out the Whitaker Institute website on whitakerinstitute.ie. Pat, thanks very much.
Thank you, Angela.